partner, her husband, Alan Campbell, who is a fighter supreme and a partner with her. You won't find this. We have an article over here about her plight, and we're going to be out picketing this coming Wednesday. But I want to let you know how they found each other, and it'll speak to Alan and it'll speak to Cynthia. Her husband is 70-something, and he was a Marine officer, and then he ended up in Africa for 30 years doing something. He says, I was a fixer, Don. And the U.S. Embassy in one of the countries over there, during the massacres in Rwanda, said, can you go into Rwanda and report back to us what's happening? Find a helicopter. And he could, one of these people like James Bond can fly anything. And he gets a helicopter, and he flies in, and he finds 10,000 bodies in some lake. And then he sneaks into some church and finds 5,000 bodies. Then he reports back to the ambassador. He says, and he tells him, you've got to call the president to do something about this. And the president was Clinton at the time. Ambassador calls Clinton. Clinton does nothing. He ends up going on TV, Alan Campbell, and explaining all the stuff that's going on. Cynthia is at home, doesn't know this guy from Adam, and watches this and goes, man, this guy is courageous. This is incredible. Somehow she meets him at the New Orleans airport, sight unseen, walks up to him and says, I'm going to marry you. He looks at her like a nut. No, I'm going to marry you because you're such a wonderful person. He ended up getting married. He's got heart problems. She kept him alive on numerous occasions because he would have problems with his heart. He was in the hospital 2 weeks ago again with some heart problems. And now she's out here with cancer and he's just a bear. He says, Don, they can kill me, but they can't hurt me. And he just goes in front of Blue Shield with Cynthia, hits in the microphone and starts screaming at the building. Yesterday they rented a van and they drove down to L.A. to scream in front of Blue Shield because Blue Shield screwed him too. And they just get out there and they just scream at the building, and it's terrible PR for him. But they just won't quit. And he says, if she dies, I'm dead. I got nothing to live for. And so this is a tremendously heroic couple who is bringing a lot of attention to this. So I want to encourage you to come out with us on Wednesday from 11:30 to 1 at 50 Beale Street. It would be nice if you get yourself a T-shirt. We'll make some signs. Sign up so we know. Sign up. Check off the box if you can go so we know how many signs to make. But these are these people make you be proud to be alive and to be with these human beings. They're great people. So with that, let me stop there and go on to our last speaker is Efren Garza, who's a registered nurse at Alta Bates. That's in Berkeley? In Berkeley. He's a member of the California Nurses Association, and you've been working on this issue for quite a while now too, right? Right, we spoke together.
Yeah, we've been meeting.
Right. So he'll bring us an East Bay perspective from Alta Bates. Thank you.
My name is Efren Garza. I don't live in the Bay Area. In the East or West or whatever. I live in the South Bay. But I commute up to Alta Bates Summit Medical Center, a Sutter affiliate. I'm also on the bargaining team there and are involved with St. Luke's and all the situations that's going on right now. Right now, what the nurses are facing, one is a very huge reduction in healthcare provision from the employer, Sutter Health Affiliates. They're wanting us to take a great deal of cuts in our healthcare, and for the first time ever, nurses as a whole are really realizing how really vulnerable we all are. It doesn't matter, you know, whether we're a middle class, white collar, or whatever it is. The healthcare industry doesn't give a damn about anybody except profit. And that's what the whole situation is. They can call, even Sutter Health can call itself non-for-profit, but when you get 33% increase in revenue over a 12-month period, I'd say that's a pretty hefty profit of $71 million. On a personal issue, 17 years ago, we were covered by a member healthcare organization, HMO, and our second daughter was born. We had a great deal of difficulty with the HMO people in providing OB care to my wife. There was always constantly battling, constantly going back and forth, high risk, not high risk, this risk and that risk. Finally, it turned out that she was supposed to have a cesarean section, and because she was under 5 foot tall and she had a 10-pound fetus that was not going to be able to be delivered vaginally. Well, at the last minute, they decided to cancel the cesarean on that Monday that we were supposed to go in, and for some unknown reason had rescheduled it for 2 days later. That evening, my wife went into labor, and she had a breach, a 10-pound fetus that was a breach. So when I called the HMO to tell them that her water had broken, and it was specifically stated that, you know, before I call an ambulance, I was to call the main office and have the ambulance authorized. So I had to take time to call the main office, have the ambulance authorized, and then eventually they say, okay, call 911. By this time, we have an entire foot hanging out down to her knee. It's a female child. And then the ambulance doesn't arrive. So I told my wife, I think we better leave. We need to just get to the nearest HMO hospital and, you know, get you in the emergency room. So we put her in a truck, headed out. 3 blocks later, we hear the sirens coming. And then so we stopped, and my wife says, stop, stop, stop. It's the ambulance. I'm all, oh, I don't want to stop. But she says, stop. So I stop. Then we're arguing. Then I'm sitting there with the fire department, paramedics, and an ambulance rig, and they're all arguing about which hospital they're going to take her to, because we're an HMO members, but the nearest hospital is not an HMO member hospital, and so they decide that they're going to try to deliver this 10-pound fetus that was supposed to be not non-vaginally delivered in the crossroads, and it's in the mid-December. You know, it's like 50 degrees outside. By this time, we have a buttocks staring at us coming out of my wife's body. And then I finally just said, you know what, who's in charge here? And it was the chief of the department. And then I said, we need to move on with this. You know, I said, we need to just go to the nearest hospital. I don't care which hospital it is, but we need to get my wife to an ER. And he said, well, they're going to try to deliver vaginally. And I said, no, they're not. You know, this is a 10-pound breach, and you're not going to do that. You need an ER surgeon and so forth, none of which you have in the back of that rig. So finally, the only reason he finally moved on it was because I said, this is the last conversation we're having. The next conversation you and I have will be with our lawyers sitting at our sides across from the table. So finally, they all heard that, and they said, okay, we're headed out. Let's go. But they didn't take us to the nearest HMO hospital, because it wasn't the nearest hospital. It was actually the county hospital, Santa Clara County Valley Health and Hospital System. When we get there, no one's announced to them that we're supposed to be on our way. So this doctor runs out, or somebody runs out and says, what the hell's going on here? You know, who are these people? And then I jump out and I said, you know, present the story. This is my wife. You know, we've got a 10-pound breach. By this time, we have a fetus that with the up to the nipple line. Oh. So you can see a fetus coming out, and it's down to the nipple line. And so it's going to be too late for a cesarean, obviously. And so she says, why didn't anybody call? And I'm all, I have no idea why nobody called. I've been sitting arguing with them at a crossroads to bring us to the nearest hospital. So she starts working on our daughter, on the fetus, and you can hear all this cracking and popping and popping and cracking, and then she finally takes her arm out and pops one arm out, and then she's got one arm and a head inside, and then does some more cracking and popping, pulls it out, then it's just the head stuck inside. So finally, she's able to get her head out. But the baby is clinically dead. It's an APGAR of zero. There's no vital signs, no breath signs. She's completely blue. You know, she's physically dead. And so the doctor just says, anybody have a towel or a blanket? And I just looked at her and says, a towel or a blanket? I says, no CPR. you know, aren't you going to do something about this? You know, aren't you going to, you know, we came to the hospital trying to bring her to medical care, and all you want is a blanket or a towel. And a really, fortunately, it was a really wise, quick, witted RT, respiratory therapist, jumps into the game, takes the fetus away from her and starts doing CPR and bagging her and runs into the ER with her. Well, the prognosis was that she was multiply fractured, would be developmentally disabled for the rest of her life, was probably going to be ventilator dependent. And on top of that, I was told that the HMO had denied care because I had failed to take my wife to a member hospital, and that I was going to be liable for this huge bill. And then unless I immediately allowed my wife to be discharged, sent to the membership hospital, and then the child could be evac'd out in the next morning. And I said, absolutely not. I said, that is unconscionable, that is unacceptable, it's immoral. I said, and it is illegal as far as I'm concerned. So after much ado, I had to fight with the HMO people. It was constant, but it was really, they knew that I had a good case because they had failed to do the cesarean in the morning, or that was what I was using for the whole thing. So, but my wife was finally allowed to stay in overnight. And what was odd was here's the doctor that doesn't even belong to the HMO. It's none of her business, but she's telling me that I'm going to be liable for this huge bill unless I let my wife be discharged. And I'm telling her, well, you know what? As far as I'm concerned, I never hired you. You're not on this case. And if you are, you're fired. That's all there is to it. You're fired. I says, I don't want to hear any more from you. I don't want to hear any more from any of your colleagues. It's between me and the HMO. So I did. It was a really difficult time, but I did manage. And it's because of constant threat of lawsuits, you know, and so forth. And then they knew I was a nurse. You know, they found out I was a nurse. So that really, I think, has something to do with the outcome, because I doubt very seriously that if I had been the same as my father, a janitor, that it would have been the outcome would have been this as good financially. Well, fortunately for us, I had to fight the doctors because they insisted that our daughter be maintained on a ventilator. And I said, well, you know, you need to take her off the ventilator because a vent is it's a quality of life, not quantity. And if she's going to die, she's going to die. And if she's going to live, she's going to live. And there's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. You already told me she's going to be developmentally disabled, brain damaged for the rest of her life. So what difference does it make whether she's brain damaged on a ventilator or not, or brain damaged, you know, on her own? Well, after 24 hours, we finally did. They took her off of it. She breathed on her own, and it was just. But it was one nightmare after another, because then she was exposed to tuberculosis, so she had to go on INH, and that was causing her seizures. And I just took her off of it, and the doctors were very upset with me because I didn't treat her, and I said, well, I'm not going to treat her with a poison that's causing her to have seizures, and so it's a. The situation did wind up to be very positive because our daughter is very healthy. You know, she doesn't have any developmental disability. And she's now 17 years old and graduating from Milpitas High School. But the whole issue is, if we had, like, it's something that if we had had, or if we have some universal health care, we wouldn't have to worry about where we're going and what hospital we're going to be ending up at, and whether or not we're going to be treated, and whether or not there's going to be anybody answering the phone to allow you to get an ambulance. You know, that's what the whole point is that we need universal health care. I mean, I could give you other stories where, you know, other family members have gone through some horrific, difficult times because of the inability to access health care. And I fully support this bill. And I'm going to work with, you know, I've gone through many community situations in the South Bay, including churches and church groups, and working to organize individuals, and not just organize, but give people education on what this really means. This really means, you know, a productive, healthy life for all of us. Kaiser can say, live long and what is it?
Thrive.
You know, but it happens to be the member hospital that I had to deal with 17 years ago. Thank you.